When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Howdy, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and Jerry's here too. And we're just some homey, folksy types ready to spin a good yarn for you about the old farmer's almond.
That's right. You know why I commissioned this one?
Why, Chuck? Why?
Because I thought it would be fun to put a old farmer's almanac in the outhouse at my camp.
Okay. Wait, first, you have an outhouse?
I have an outhouse.
Is it just a pit, like a latrine with a log over it?
No, it's a composting toilet.
Okay.
With a little solar panel outside that runs a fan.
Okay.
And
what does the fan do?
The fan moves air through to provide aerobic interaction.
Exercise?
With the poop. Okay. And the composting peat.
I just made a compost tea like that, but I used submerged little fountain pump to create the air movement.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
It is neat. So, yeah, I got a composting toilet. It's good. It helps. I don't use it. I use it to go poopy if I'm there for more than a couple of days. But largely I put it there. So, some of the ladies in my life and friends, wives and things, don't like to squat in the woods. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't mind.
Sure.
But I put that there so everyone would want to go camping at the camp and be like, yeah, you got a composting toilet. I feel good about using it.
All right. I can see the conversation between the couple in the kitchen back in Atlanta. Like, well, no. He's got a composting toilet. Well, now now you can count me in.
Well, and now all you got to say is he's got a composting toilet and an old farmer's almanac in that outhouse, because I thought it would just be sort of a fun thing, because I knew from growing up as a kid that an old farmer's almanac was quite a common thing to find in a bathroom or an outhouse to read while you're there on the john. So I have one there. It's from a couple of years ago. I need to get a new one. I should change it every year. That's sort of the whole point of an almanac.
It's pretty slack.
And so I thought, I was reading it the other day when I was up there cutting the grass, and I was like, I really don't even know the history of these things. And so let's find out.
So did you read them when you were a kid too?
I mean, a little bit here and there. It's not very interesting for a kid.
Sure. I could see that.
But my grandmother, Bryant, my dad's mom was a backyard farmer her whole life. And, you know, she was one of these people that put a lot of stock in the farmer's almanac. And so it was just something I knew about in my life as a kid. Probably didn't read it a ton, though.
I was never exposed to it. I knew it existed.
You were from the north.
Yeah.
I know it was Midwest, but to Georgia, Ohio was the north.
Yeah, still, but there was corn everywhere around I lived.
Oh, sure.
So it is a little surprising. Yeah. But the biggest surprise that I received since we started researching this is that Yumi apparently used to read the Farmer's Almanac when she was a little kid.
Nothing you ever tell me about Yumi will surprise me.
It's true.
She just never knows.
No, you really don't.
That's great.
For those of you who've never met Yumi, you wouldn't consider her a Farmer's Almanac type.
That's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, so I thought that was neat. She's very well-rounded. But I, in like Chia Pet fashion, went on and ordered, this time myself, a farmer's almanac. I was going to order you one, and then I was like, I'll bet he's already got one on the way.
Oh, look at you. Very smart. Also, I made a joke about you're from the north. As it turns out, as we'll see, the old farmer's almanac came from New England originally.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, people from the north, there's plenty of farming that went on all over the country.
By God, they even cover the weather forecast for the year in California.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't discriminate.
All right. So big thanks to Dave Ruse, who helped us out with this one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk mostly about the old farmer's almanac, but we will talk a little bit about its rival, the farmer's almanac. But we're talking about the old farmer's almanac, the one that's looked the same since its inception with that yellow cover, the four seasons. It's very, did you get yours in the mail yet?
No, I pre-ordered it. It won't arrive until August 30th.
Oh, this is for next year?
Yes.
Oh, that's very smart. Ordered a year in advance?
I appreciate it. Well, I mean, what am I going to do? Be like, well, what happened 2 weeks ago getting this year's, you know? I mean, like,
well,
I want
to... you could, from August to December, you could surely gain some insight, no?
I don't like to waste money. I'd rather just wait.
Yeah. But it's been the same. We'll talk a little bit more about the cover and its presentation and all that. But it's very iconic looking if you've ever seen one. It's been around since 1792.
That's amazing.
Which means it's the oldest continuously published periodical in North America.
Yeah, and I looked it up. That's the oldest published anything that's been continuously printed in North America is the Hartford Courant. Started as the Connecticut Courant in 1764, not too much sooner than the Farmer's Almanac. But then if you look for the world, the Swiss have us beat by a mile.
Oh, yeah?
They have a what's called the Post and Domestic Times, the Post Ach Inrich Tidningar. Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, that means the Post and Domestic Times, which has been printed continuously since 1645.
Amazing.
But still, that's nothing to sneeze at. 1792, and they never missed an edition. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And these books basically, I mean, there was sort of an almanac craze at one point. Lots of small family farms all over the country.
Yeah.
Pre-industrialization. There were hundreds of farmers' almanacs all over the place. A lot of regional ones, even local ones. And what you would find in them, if you were like, well, guys, what the heck is a farmer's almanac?
Good walk back.
What it is there are books that will say things like, here's when you should plant things. Here's some tips on cattle. Very importantly, here are astronomical charts. This is when the sun is going to rise and set in the spring and throughout the year. These are the phases of the moon. Here are some recipes. Maybe here's some jokes. Here's some poetry. So they would mix in some folksy, fun stuff and entertaining stuff along with sort of boots to the ground advice, tips, and raw data for farming.
Yeah. But the big draw is the long-range weather forecasts. Like they essentially forecast the weather generally for the entire United States and Canada a year in advance.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that.
And they say that they're 80% accurate, which is mind-boggling. It's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's things like I remember my grandmother referring to it for her crops later in the year to see, like, how rainy is it going to be this fall? How rainy will it be 6 months from now?
Exactly.
And people put a lot of stock in it, and some people still do even.
Yeah, so it's an unusual and unique combination of folksy folk wisdom and folklore even. Things like if you want to have turnips in the winter and there's no such thing as refrigeration, keep them packed in sawdust during the summer or whatever. Yeah. Stuff like that. It's useful. But then there's also like astrology, like horoscopes and that kind of thing. So then it's alongside like actual legitimate astronomical data that is accurate. So it's a weird combination of
it
this
really
stuff.
Is.
And apparently it grew out of the medieval era. And the word almanac itself seems to have been invented by medieval French astronomers in the 13th century, although they said that it was an Arabic word, almanac, and that meant calendar of the heavens, and apparently these astronomers just totally made that up.
Yeah, it was, like you said, invented by the French. These medieval almanacs were just handwritten. This is before the printing press, and they did some similar things, though. They talked about like celestial bodies and moon phases and stuff like that. Eventually, when the printing press comes along, they were some of the first things to be printed. Like, people lived their lives by these a lot of times. So they were some of the most popular early books and periodicals that existed in the world, essentially.
Yeah, and because of their popularity, and because even back then they were just kind of bizarre creatures, their own thing, they were also widely satirized, too. As early as 1532, there was a French satirist named Rabelais who created a parody almanac, and he prognosticated stuff that's quite obvious as a way to just kind of mock what almanacs do. But he started a trend that lasted for hundreds of years. And the most famous parody almanac was Poor Richard's Almanac, which was published by Benjamin Franklin from 1732 to 58. And what's neat is, even though it was a parody and they made stuff up and it was funny and a satire of almanacs, it also contained like actual helpful, useful information too.
Yeah, it did. He wrote under the pseudonym Richard Saunders. And it's famous for a lot of things, one of which, like you said, it was around for, 20-something years, 25, 26 years?
I'm guessing like 30-something.
Yeah, but it was like the best-selling for that long. But it was very famous now for these, a lot of turns of phrase that Franklin invented as Saunders.
Such as?
We still use today. Haste makes waste is one. Fish and visitors smell after 3 days. Mm-hmm. And of course, the old standard, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Very nice.
All came from Poor Richard's Almanac.
Yeah, from the noodle of Ben Franklin himself, because he wrote it and published it.
That's right.
What a Renaissance dude he was.
He really was. We've kind of danced around Franklin here and there. I wonder if we could ever. These annoying podcasting sprites. I wonder if we should ever just dive in and just cover him in earnest.
I think we totally should.
You probably should. Or at the very least, that kite and the key.
I feel like we have talked about that before.
Have we?
Yeah, I can't remember which episode, but I think we're like, didn't happen.
Yeah.
But his Poor Richard's Almanac, everything Franklin touched basically turned to gold. He was just good at everything. And his parody almanac, which was apparently inspired by a European almanac called Poor Robins. He kicked off like that almanac craze that you talked about in, I think, the late 18th century, which is when Robert Bailey Thomas came along and said, I'm getting in on this almanac stuff myself because I find them thoroughly fascinating.
I think that's a great place for a break.
Okay.
We'll come back if you agree and talk about who Robert Bailey Thomas was right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva Presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva Presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva Presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva Presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
All right. So Robert Bailey Thomas is an entrepreneur. Almanacs are all the craze. Mm-hmm. He's like you said, he wanted to get in on this action. He was a dude from Massachusetts who was a farm guy, but a farm guy raised by educated parents, an educated farming family who very much valued reading. They had a very big library, and he would just, you know, he was quite taken with almanacs and astronomy and science journals, and kind of it all sort of makes sense that he would one day want to do an almanac when you look at his upbringing.
Yeah, and it's pretty remarkable that his parents had a library in their house, but they were educated farmers, and they made sure that their kid was educated as well. Before he became an almanac publisher, he was a school teacher, a bookbinder, and he said, nope, I'm going to do this almanac thing. I've been putting it off long enough. By God, I'm going to chase my dream. And he did. So he went to Boston. He went and studied at Osgood Carleton School of Mathematics in Boston. Which
it
today
so janky.
It does. Like if you're taking classes from Osgood Carleton School of Mathematics today, you should unenroll and ask for your money back.
Boy, I hope it's not still around.
I hope not too, because that was a pretty harsh insult. But at the time, I mean, it was a legitimate school. It just had a silly name. And that's where Robert Thomas went to go figure out how to create these astronomical charts that he was going to publish in his almanac.
Yeah, so like all the things are there. His parents were farmers. He was into science. He worked as a bookbinder and a teacher. He took these math classes. Like it is all sort of coalescing into a pretty obvious thing to do. And that year in 1793, or I guess the year before, for the year 1793, he put out, because people like, I don't know, Josh Clark liked to buy things a little early.
Yeah.
You don't buy this year's calendar in July? What a waste.
Exactly. You buy next year's calendar in July.
My mom might do that when I was a kid because they were on sale.
Half price calendar.
But I'm not saying that that's the way forward for all humanity.
That's hilarious. I'd be an idiot not to buy this.
I think I got my, I got a calendar every year, and I think I always got it on my birthday in March for. And I can't imagine.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I got a calendar in the mail from being a member of the Audubon Society, and I was like, what the hell am I going to do with this? Like, an actual legitimate calendar these days is like, it's just not handy. Like, it just doesn't have a place in the world. So I have to figure out what to do with it.
I disagree. Is it a daily calendar?
No, it's a calendar.
A monthly thing?
Like what you got for your birthday.
My friend, we still get calendars. Emily, I wish I could remember the artists, but these very beautiful month calendars, these artists draws these very beautiful pictures.
Sure.
And it hangs on the wall. And I find a great deal of value in a month at a glance without getting out my phone and all the distractions that come with that.
I feel it's like I'm a big enough person to admit when I'm wrong.
Hey, no, not everything works for everyone.
So, no, I was just
you might think it's silly.
Poo-pooing calendars and you changed my mind. I'm going to put it up somewhere because you're right. And I knew that just seeing the little pretty birds every month is great. I was going to do something with it, but I was still just astonished. I haven't seen an actual calendar for a very long time.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. All right. So where are we? He finished his mathematics and in 1793 put out the first edition, which was called The Farmer's Almanac. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about the word old coming and going as it comes and goes.
So he apparently in the first cover, he said that the Farmer's Almanac containing, besides the large number of astronomical calculations and farmer's calendar for every month of the year, as great a variety of new, useful, and entertaining matter, which is not the best sentence ever, but it really gets across. It's just jam-packed with stuff. And he fit it all into a 46-page book, which is much slimmer than the ones you get today from what I understand.
Yeah, and what do you call that, a slogan, I guess?
I guess.
Clumsy. It's still on
slogan?
The cover.
Is huh? it? Is it still?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You'll see very soon. Hmm. It's been on there for 230 straight years, as well as pictures of, or I guess portraits of Ben Franklin on one side.
Yeah.
And Robert Thomas on the other.
Why am I thinking of Rico Tubbs every time we say Robert Bailey Thomas's name? What was his name? I know it was three names and there was a Thomas in there, I think.
Philip Thomas. Oh, you mean the actor?
Yeah, Rico Tubbs from Miami Vice.
Yeah, I thought, what was his real name? Don Johnson and...
Yeah, him.
I can't remember. What happened to that guy? Is he around?
Oh, I'm sure he's around. He got super rich off of Miami Vice and said, "So long, suckers, I'm going to become a farmer." And he subscribed to the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah, like you said, 46 pages, and it had all the things you would expect. It had all those sunrises and sunsets and moon phases. It had all the advice. It had home remedies for you know, little ailments and things like that. This was just coming off of the snake oil sort of period, or maybe it was still right in the middle of it, actually.
Yeah, I think that lasted well into the 19th and even early 20th century.
Yeah, so all this kind of stuff was very popular, and he put it in print, gardening advice, all the poetry and the little jokes, and he had math puzzles and things like, because he was a math guy from that amazing college that he went to.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently was a good writer, and that's why it became, because like we said, there were hundreds of almanacs, and this one became the most popular, because he was good at doing it. He was a... for the time, he was sort of a witty and clever guy, and people liked his writing.
Yeah, that's really important that he wasn't like this innovative, amazing, like he didn't invent the whole thing. He came along centuries after the first one started being published, but he was just that interesting that his publication has been around 230 years. That's pretty remarkable if you really and think about it. That's how much of a nerve that guy touched. And that list of stuff that you talked about, that's essentially exactly what you're going to find today.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and looked up some of the math problems. I'm like, I'll bet I can do this.
Right. Sure.
There was
renowned mathematician.
I found from the 1974 edition.
Uh-huh.
And it has three circles and they're separate from one another.
Okay.
And the question is, how many circles can you draw that touch all three circles in just one point? And I'm like, well, you can draw one in the center of them, and you can draw one on the outside, so two. And I went and flipped forward to see what the answer was, and the answer was seven. And I still have no idea, and I probably never will, how you could possibly draw seven circles that fulfilled that criteria. And I'm just sticking with two. I think it's a misprint.
No, it didn't show you, though?
No, it just said seven. That was it.
That's
and then it moved on to the next answer.
Really annoying.
Yeah,
someone will send in an answer. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of math help.
I don't want to know a different answer. The answer is two.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
So one example, you know, we talked about people liking his writing and him being a little more creative than maybe your average almanac at the time, was he did one on cider making, but instead of just leaving instructions and a recipe, he made it more of a story about he and a farmer with some witticisms and jokes and stuff. Kind of like maybe he started that recipe trend of having to scroll for 10 pages
exactly.
Before you get to the recipe.
Thank God for that jump to recipe button.
Amen.
But that cider making thing, that's a good example of what you'd find. That was for like the month of October. So each month would have, you know, some information or some suggestions on what you should do around the farm that month. And it's making cider is what you would do in October. And then on the opposite page, I love this. I hope they still use it so I can get it in my 2024 edition. But it would say at the top of the month, October hath 31 days.
Ugh.
And for some reason, it just makes it seem so amazing. Ominous.
Yeah.
You know, like something bad's going to happen in October because they said it hath 31 days.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I hope it does have 31 days. You know, it would be ominous if it said October hath 28 days this year.
Yeah. The almanac would know.
Thomas himself did 53 editions of the Farmer's Almanac before he died in 1846. He apparently died editing, as the story goes, for the next edition that was ready to be shipped to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story of the old Farmer's Almanac. But what about the old?
Oh, well, the old part actually came all the way back in 1832 when Philip Seymour Hoffman was still editing the almanac. He changed the name to the Old Farmer's Almanac because it had been around for 35 years already.
Mm-hmm.
And it had enough competition that he wanted to be like, hey, don't forget, this is the original Farmer's Almanac, but instead he used old.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the Philip Seymour Hoffman joke, but I don't get it.
Robert Bailey Thomas.
Oh, okay. Just three names.
Mm-hmm.
You going to call him John Wayne Gacy next?
Well, no. I called him Philip Seymour Hoffman because the Rico Tubbs has Philip. And I think Philip Michael Thomas.
Philip Michael Thomas?
Yes, it is. It's Philip Michael Thomas.
Whew.
And we didn't look it up either, did we?
We did it. I didn't look it up. When you said Philip, it clicked.
I didn't either. Yeah, we did it, Chuck. We just connected brain waves.
I know. I feel like we should just stop.
Sure.
I mean, retire.
Okay.
So you talked about old, right? You finished that part.
Yeah, that he was distinguishing his publication from the competition.
That's right. And John Jinks, I want to call him Richard for some reason, probably because of Richard's almanac. Thomas died. John Jinks was the guy who changed it to old, and that cover art started because of Jinks in 1851, and that's the same cover that they still use today that I was talking about.
Yeah, and apparently Thomas changed it to, he's the one who introduced old, stopped. He took it away 3 years later, and then his successor said, no, we're going to go back to the Old Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah, that was Jinks.
Yeah, Mr. Jinks.
I think we just got really confusing then, but hopefully people figure it out.
Yeah, eventually. Just keep listening to what we said over and over, and you'll eventually discern the truth.
All right, so we should talk a little bit, though, about the other Farmer's Almanac, because I'm sure when you went online, unless you just typed in old, if you just type in Farmer's Almanac, you're going to see probably both the Old Farmer's Almanac in the yellow and then just the Farmer's Almanac in sort of orangey, and it looks more modern than the other one.
Yeah, I guess more modern is it's a relative term. They both look pretty old-timey to me.
Yeah, that's true. I think the other one looks older, though.
Okay, but it was founded in 1818, so it's pretty old itself, but because the original Farmer's Almanac, the Old Farmer's Almanac, was from 1792, they just have to acquiesce and say, yes, we're just the Farmer's Almanac. But there's a I think she doesn't edit anymore, Janice Stillman. She was the first woman editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. And she was editing as recently as a few years ago, if she isn't still. And she said that there's one other publication, a Farmer's Almanac, that seems to, the kind word is, emulate everything we do. Yeah. And this is like, she's saying this in like 2018 or 19. These publications have been like rivals of one another for centuries now, and they still throw shade at one another every chance they get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're the two big ones. And I think the Old Farmer's Almanac outsells the regular, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessarily by too much. I think they both sell a pretty decent amount.
They both sell millions still.
Millions. Maybe even billions.
No, just millions.
Oh, okay.
One of the big diffs, though, and I think I even remember this growing up, is that you could buy an Old Farmer's Almanac in a store.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to get to a bank or maybe to get your insurance, like to an actual insurance agent at an office.
Who is also a part-time farmer?
perhaps. Then you might get a farmer's almanac branded by that business, because that is what they did. That was their strategy, is let's not sell this thing to retail stores. Mm-hmm. Let's sell it to businesses. Let them put their stamp on the front of it and give them out instead of a toaster.
They still do that. And only since 1994 or five edition, they started selling them in retail stores. But they also still offer it as like a branding thing for banks. The kind of banks that like John Wisdom robbed in Wisdom, that Emilio Estevez movie. That's where you would get like a bank branded Farmer's Almanac.
Wow. Yeah, sure. Like a hayseed bank.
Sure. I wouldn't call it that, but.
We should have a Stuff You Should Know branded Farmer's Almanac and send those out.
It would be.
That'd be pretty fun.
Awesome.
I wonder how much that costs.
There, it's not much. I can't remember. It came up in Google search and I was like, that's reasonable. It wasn't much at all. I think $25 or something for 100 of them or something crazy.
Did you get the Philip Michael Thomas branded Farmer's Almanac?
Yeah.
So the regular Farmer's Almanac, the one that's newer, that's in scare quotes, a guy named Ray Geiger ran that for about 60 years. Mm-hmm. And he was a big marketing whiz. And he used to refer to himself as the most interviewed man in America. And he may be right. He apparently was interviewed more than 18,000 times in his career. And he seemed to really, really enjoy sitting down and talking about the Farmer's Almanac and himself.
Yeah. And one of the other things he did too, Chuck, was in addition to giving interviews to just drum up business for the Farmer's Almanac or keep it interested. And this is like, he's working from 1934 to 1994. That is a tough period to remain at the helm of a Farmer's Almanac and keep people interested in it as the world is changing like it is. And that's what he dedicated himself to. And one of the other things he would do in addition to interviews is create like national campaigns to do something that was kind of Farmer's Almanac-y, and to get people talking about things that was Farmer's Almanac-y and the Farmer's Almanac itself.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who went from the Lindy Hop to grunge.
Yeah, for sure.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy.
And those campaigns, and I think a lot of this was to get attention. I'm not sure how many of them he really, really wanted to get accomplished, or maybe he wanted them accomplished and it was a PR thing, but it seemed to get attention, I think, was maybe the point. But like, hey, let's move Thanksgiving to October.
Sure. More in line with Canada.
Forget paper dollars. Let's use coins. Stuff like that.
The one that I can get behind, by golly, is the extending daylight savings time year-round. I wish
they're doing that, though, right?
They talk about it every year, and I don't know who's dragging their heels on this.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts every year. Twice a year, I go totally bonkers. Because of daylight savings time coming or going, it just stinks, you know? So
I agree.
I really wish he would have been successful, but he was successful with one campaign. Apparently, I don't know what decade it was, but the USPS was planning on replacing on postmarks, the place name, or town or and state, whatever, with a code, a numerical code. And he started this campaign to say, no, let's keep the place names. It's way more interesting than a numerical code, and the USPS listened. So that's why there's still place names on postmarks.
Oh, okay.
You know, when you get it stamped at the post office, it says, you know, Atlanta, Georgia or something
right.
Shows where it was sent from.
Yeah.
They were going to replace it with, you know, 00329 or something that.
And it's just
like robot talk, you know?
Yeah.
And he saved the day.
Who needs that?
Robots.
All right, we're going to take another break. We're going to talk about more lore and finally get to the bottom of whether or not those weather predictions are really right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
So, one thing I did not realize, Chuck, is that there's actual lore surrounding almanacs, which makes sense in retrospect. We're talking about a couple hundred years plus of editions of two different almanacs. So, of course, they're going to have played a role in something other than their own publications. And they did a few times over. One of the things that does have to do with their actual, like the actual physical almanac, is that there's a hole in the top left corner of both of them. And both almanacs claim to have been the originator of that. And the reason that both almanacs say they created this hole is because they found out their customers were doing the same thing. They were nailing hammering a nail through the almanac when it arrived, pull the nail out and put a piece of string through it so they could hang it from a hook wherever they wanted to keep it handy.
Pretty cool. They both have the same story. Like you said, that's the one thing that I, after reading this, I have mine in my outhouse just sitting in the magazine rack that screwed into the wall. And I'm going to change that next time I go up there. I'm going to, you know, put a nail in the wall and a string through that thing so we can hang it up.
That's apparently how it's done.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah, I'm going to hang it right next to my bird calendar.
Right. You got to go back in time.
That's right.
So they both said they came up with that, but apparently the one distinction is the regular farmer's almanac is the one that they sort of claimed that you could hang it up in the outhouse specifically so you could use it as a reference or to wipe your butt.
Mm-hmm. So both of them said, well, we started drilling this, you know, beforehand, drilling the hole in beforehand so it arrives pre-drilled. Whoever started it will probably never know. And that's just a really good example of farmer's almanac and old farmer's almanac rivalry. Like they both have the audacity to say, nope, it was us. And here's the identical story the other one is telling of why we started doing it.
Yeah, totally.
There's another, there's a trial that Abraham Lincoln was a part of called the Almanac Trial, where almanacs played an outsized role in it too.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. Lincoln was defending a friend of his son who was accused of murder, didn't do a lot of these criminal trials, but since it was a pal, he was like, sure, I'll step up. And in the trial, there was this very Brady Bunchy kind of thing that happened. He did not throw his briefcase on the floor.
Man, that was a good episode.
That was a good episode. If you've never seen the Brady Bunch, it's a great trial scene where Mr. Brady, there was a, I think the guy suing or something,
yeah,
had a neck brace on.
Said he had whiplash from being rear-ended by Mrs. Brady.
That's right. That's what it was. And no one believed the guy. And during the middle of the court scene, Mr. Brady throws his briefcase on the floor and it lands with a thud. And the man twists his neck, which he would not be able to do had he had a stiff neck.
Yeah, he jerked over to look to see what that sound was. Oh, man. Just Mike brilliant. Brady stood up and like shook his fists and screamed this primal scream. It was one of the most bizarre moments in TV history.
It was really great. But Lincoln did something similar when the, I believe, the prosecution said, I saw the defendant beating a victim over the head at 11 p.m. Lincoln said, well, how did you know it was him at 11 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
And the witness said, the moon was high and bright in the sky. And Lincoln said, aha, and threw his figurative briefcase by holding up a farmer's almanac and pointing out that, no, 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 we can actually see that the moon was not bright and high in the sky on that night. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln won that case. And both almanacs say, yeah, that was us. And
exactly.
Apparently it was neither.
Yeah, there was the foreman of the jury said it was a Jane's almanac, spelled like Thomas Jane.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knew he was going to make an appearance in this episode?
Not me, know? Or the Brady Bunch. This is all over the map. Miami Vice.
I read a little kind of brief on the almanac trial, and apparently Lincoln's, host, his client. Man, I am not in top form today, I'll tell you that. His client was just guilty of sin. Apparently, one of his own defense witnesses said, you can put me on the stand, but you want to be careful what questions you ask me because you're not going to want to know, you're not going to want to hear what I have to say. So he
just don't
knew.
Ask me if he did it.
Exactly. So he knew that this guy was guilty and he still defended him and got him acquitted, which is not Lincoln-esque. But apparently after he became president, kind of made some moves to get another guy who had been convicted as an accomplice released from prison because he knew that it was actually the guy who he had gotten acquitted.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It is, but it's some shady Lincoln stuff that's just, it's not in his character, or at least the character we understand. And the author of this post on it said that they kind of chalked it up to he was presented with one of those terrible moral choices that, you know, sometimes come along in life where he had to choose between his own, you know, principles and a friendship that he really cared about. And he chose the friendship. So people can excuse things, anything Lincoln did. We love him in the United States for those of you who live abroad.
Really quickly, you might like to know that Emily was called to jury duty this week.
Oh, yeah. How's it going?
Well, she was excused, but it was going to be a murder trial.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? And she did not want to be on it.
I can imagine.
And she was excused, but she went down to the, you know, the, what's the voir dire? Is that what it was?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Nice memory.
She went through that process and had never been that far before, so it was fairly interesting.
Yeah. Does she know why she was excused?
She does, and I'll tell you later.
Okay, great. I can't wait to hear.
She didn't like make up stuff that made her sound like a bad person or something like that, which is a common thing.
Okay, good. That's out of her character.
It's out of her character. All right, so let's get to the bottom of this weather thing.
Mm-hmm.
The two farmers' almanacs together, it seems like, sell between 10 and 12 million copies a year.
Is that
still,
right? Wowee.
Which is unbelievable. Yeah, 3 to 5 million for the old. And it said, I think, 6 or so for the newer one. So I guess it's outpaced the old Farmer's Almanac, sadly.
Mm.
So one of the reasons people still buy this and still depend on it is for these long-range weather forecasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they have long touted an 80% accuracy rate.
That's crazy.
I think you said earlier, 18 different regions in the U.S., 6 regions in Canada for the year ahead of time.
A year.
A full, or in your case, 18 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
And the old story was, is that the Old Farmer's Almanac had a secret formula that Robert Thomas created himself, locked in a black box in the offices in Dublin, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Apparently, editor Janice Stillman that you referred to went to this box at one point, found a bunch of handwritten notes from Thomas about the weather, but not a secret formula.
It's like a Geraldo moment.
And apparently, Farmer's Almanac also says they have a secret formula. It's everyone, they just keep copying one another.
I know, it's crazy. So finally, so the Farmer's Almanac, the younger of the two, has a pseudonymic? Yes, pseudonymic. Yeah, exactly. I was Porky Pig in it.
Yeah.
His name is Caleb Weatherby. And who knows who Caleb Weatherby actually is or how many people have been Caleb Weatherby over the years. But they say that Caleb Weatherby has a secret formula that's used from their founder, too. So again, exact same thing. But finally, in the last 50 years, I guess, the Old Farmer's Almanac said, we actually use modern technology to make these forecasts,
right,
too. One of the things that they use, that both seem to use, apparently, that is not necessarily part of typical meteorology, is sunspot activity. They take that into consideration when they're making these projections, and it's not entirely clear how much of an effect sunspot activity has on the weather, although it's agreed upon that it probably has some effect. But whether it has any effect or not, both almanacs almost are duty-bound to include considerations of sunspot activity in their weather forecast because that is what the readers want from them.
I mean, that's kind of explains everything about why the Farmer's Almanac is still around.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want it changed. They want it to be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy named Tim Clark who wrote for about four decades in the Farmer's Almanac, the Old Farmer's Almanac, excuse me.
Yeah.
And did a lot of lectures and interviews about it, died a couple of years ago. And he very specifically talks about the fact that, like, people want it to be the same. People have been disappointed when they know we use more modern ways to predict weather.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we're not right, people want us to be right. So they sort of either remember us as being right or think we're right even when we're not right.
Exactly.
Which is kind of funny. But when you look at what they're doing as far as an 80% success rate, and we'll get to whether or not that's even true, is they just do sort of a historical average, like a peak at historical averages, I think over 30 years of rain.
Yeah, they're called climate normals.
Yeah, temperature and precipitation, basically. And then for each region, for each season of the year, they're going to say, all right, is it going to rain a little more or less? And is it going to be hotter and cooler than it has been over that 30-year average?
Yeah, they don't go into, like, on, you know, July 28th, it's going to be, you know, 92 degrees in the South. They don't do that. As far as I know, I haven't gotten my first copy yet. But from what I understand, they make these generalizations,
right,
not actual forecasts. And so what they say is, if they say that it's going to be hotter than normal, even if they say much hotter than normal, if it's even a half a degree over that 30-year climate normal average,
then they're right.
They're like, we were correct.
Yeah.
They counted as correct.
And they are technically.
They are technically, especially if you just take any qualifier out, like much hotter, and just go with hotter than average, they are correct. And that's how they say that they hit that 80% mark. The thing is there have been studies. Meteorologists love to take pot shots at the Farmer's Almanac, any Farmer's Almanac, because they're like, it's impossible to predict the weather a year out. NOAA has 90-day forecasts. They're 60% accurate. These guys are using every available technology to create these forecasts, and they can only hit 60% 90 days out. Their meteorologists are like, nobody can predict the weather anywhere accurately, especially for a whole season in an entire region a full year out.
Yeah.
And so people have done studies on just how accurate they are, and they usually come up short of 80%.
Yeah, they always come up short of 80, and it sort of ranges, I think, by year. I think in 2021, 22, over that winter, there was the woman from the Golden Gate Weather Service named Jan Null, Mm-hmm. Calculated this one out. And she found for the winter 21-22 that for precipitation, the almanac was 40% correct, and for temperature, only 6% correct.
Yeah, at the old farmer's almanac offices, they call her Jan Null, the nullifier.
50 to 52% is what they found, I think, generally. And then the University of Illinois was behind that one. So that's like, it's sort of in flip a coin territory.
Yeah, and Tim Clark says people want them to be right. That's basically just confirmation bias that, you know, when they're right, people remember it. When they're wrong, they forget. I can't speak for everybody. I mean, people who are like gardeners and like small farmers and stuff, they'll buy the farmer's almanac and maybe plan when they're going to start their garden or harvest crops based on those predictions. But there's not like hard feelings at the farmer's almanac if they get it wrong, because it means so much more than that. It's like this last outpost, this last bastion holding down like an agrarian past that just refuses to give way because the almanacs are keeping it going. And so it's almost, to me, the reason I ordered it is like a respite from the modern world.
Yeah.
And just kind of stepping through like this, a wardrobe, if you will, and entering a new world where there's acorns everywhere and you can predict how bad the weather's going to be by how many squirrels are gathering those acorns on any given day in the fall. Just things that, like, it doesn't matter if they're scientific. It just draws your attention to an important part of the world, which is nature. It's still there. And this makes you focus your attention on it for a little while. And that's great. That's all it needs to do to exist happily, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. It's not like, oh, well, we have modern technology now to more correctly predict weather, so we should get rid of the longest standing periodical in North America.
Right.
And all that, you know, kind of goofy, folksy charm and jokes and poetry. Like, I guess they could say, like, yeah, do all that, but don't do the weather. But I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
No one's living or dying by this thing.
I mean, the very fact that we have that technology means we should keep the farmer's almanacs as a reminder of other ways to be and think, too.
I agree. You don't know your past, you don't know your future.
Man, well put, Chuck. You know who would love that as a slogan on a T-shirt? Philip Michael Thomas.
Agreed.
Thank you, Chuck. If you want to know more about the Farmer's Almanac, the Old Farmer's Almanac, any almanac, really, you can just go look online, ironically, and find them and order them and hang them up in your outhouse and get all retro. And since I said outhouse, that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Noam Chomsky Lives.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Love the show. It's one of those things that can comfort me when times are tough. And thanks for all you do.
Awesome.
And I remember we weren't sure if Noam Chomsky was alive or dead, and we don't like to stop and look things up while we go.
No, who wants to do that?
Nobody likes that, by the way. Chomsky is very much alive, you guys.
Yeah.
He changed my view of the world when I stumbled upon YouTube videos of his talks in high school. He's incredibly well-read, more so than any other public intellectual I've heard of, and even if you're not down with the whole anarcho-syndicalist thing...
Nice.
Wow. It's worth reading at least one of his political books to get a more thorough grasp of how the U.S. empire works. For instance, he was actually the first one who taught me about our old buddy Edward Bernays and his ilk and all the fun things that the CIA has done abroad. And that is from Sam.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Much appreciated. Still alive, huh?
Still alive.
Did not know that. Well, if you want to let us know that somebody's still alive, we want to hear that kind of thing. Especially if we thought they were dead, you can send it to us via email like Sam did to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible.
the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.